State in court, Mr. Danny Barnes will argue the appellant, Ms. Andrea Jacob will argue the state.
May it please the court, my name again is Danny Barnes. I'm on behalf of Mr. Joseph D'Angelo and my co-counsel, Mr. Jerry Lofton. We have before this court writ of habeas corpus attacking the conditions of probation and the unlawful incarceration of Mr. Joseph D'Angelo because he is refusing to waive his Fifth Amendment privilege and answer questions to a polygraph examiner. The Supreme Court of the United States has clearly, unequivocally said in Minnesota v. Murphy prior to the Court of Appeals addressing the issue that a person doesn't lose his right to assert his Fifth Amendment privilege simply because of the conviction of a crime, whether he's put on probation or otherwise. The court said that a person cannot be required to, quote, admit or otherwise incriminate himself regarding any offense for which he has not been convicted under the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments to the United States Constitution. Clearly, that's the issue we have here.
So what kind of activities does the Fifth Amendment cover? How broad does that go?
The Supreme Court didn't address it as well as the Court of Criminal Appeals. The Court of Criminal Appeals put it out fairly clearly that any admission to any type of conduct regarding a issue for which the individual has not been convicted or that may subject him to punishment is covered, whether it is criminal, whether it is civil, whether it is administrative, whether it is formal, informal.
Okay. So your position is that may subject him to punishment?
Yes, sir.
All right. So clearly, I think we can agree that question four, since you have been on probation, have you intentionally committed any sexual crimes, is clearly covered by that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, what is your position on question three? Since you have been on probation, have you tried to isolate any child for sexual purposes?
It is a condition of...
Explain to me that that's covered by the Fifth Amendment.
It is a... First of all...
Suppose he says yes.
There's two things. One, it could subject him at that point as an admission to revocation of his probation. That is a criminal offense and a criminal penalty. The Supreme Court said that you cannot require somebody to admit to anything. And the protection goes not just to committing an offense, but if you simply believe that this may be adverse to your position, you don't have to be guilty of a crime in order to invoke the Fifth Amendment. The Supreme Court has been clear on that.
Maybe what we're talking about here is, let's suppose that the question was, have you had a beer since you've been on probation? And that was prohibited. Well, clearly, just in and of itself, have you drank a beer, that's not going to subject you to any kind of criminal liability. On the other hand, if your probation requirements say you can't have a beer, it would. So it's your position in this case that if you isolate it, you don't look at whether you isolate the question and the answer by itself, is this a crime? It's if it violates the terms and conditions of your probation, that is what you're looking at.
Yes, sir.
All right.
It subjects him to punishment.
Okay, I'm just
for his answers.
All right.
And that it might incriminate him in future criminal proceedings. That was the Supreme Court of the United States, but Chapman goes farther. It says you can't do it even in civil or administrative actions. Ask somebody something that may subject them to, or that they believe or perceive may subject them to incarceration or to some sort of punishment by the courts. I submit to the court the problem we have here, as the court has said, we put out the requirements for a polygraph, and one of the things you have to admit to is the sexual offense that got you into this sex offender, that they perceive got you into this sex offender treatment to begin with, and made you subject to a polygraph examination. They're going to talk to you about that. He has not admitted to that. He has never admitted to that. He's never going to admit to that. and he has not been convicted. That is still a case out there. Well, he does have exposure on that.
Your position is that all four of these questions,
yes, sir,
are subject to the cover of the Fifth Amendment.
Yes, sir. Because anything that could subject him to punishment, incarceration as a violation of probation, you cannot require somebody to provide evidence against themselves. The Texas Constitution goes much farther than the Supreme Court, Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution. The Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution says you should not be compelled to incriminate yourself.
But how is it punishment again when the punishment has already been agreed upon by virtue of the plea agreement? I mean, there's a range of punishment that's been agreed upon, and so I don't see how can it be punishment again
Does the court feel that if you're able to walk around and be a good and lawful citizen, doing what you want? And then to lock you in a cage for a term that you agreed to, that if don't make your probation, that's not punishment? I mean, we're talking about locking somebody up. And in this case, he hasn't even been shown to have committed any violation of his probation. He is simply being locked up because he has not agreed to waive his rights and answer questions that would ask him to admit to criminal offenses. Criminal procedure.
Was this condition of probation made known to him before he agreed to accept it?
No, it was not. And in fact, as the court shows, as is attached in
So a condition of probation was not, you will have to take a polygraph test on a regular basis and be asked about your activities vis-a-vis the requirements of probation. That was unknown to you.
At the time of the plea, that was not a condition of probation. It was not put on him. He was given standard conditions of probation.
Later, right.
And he was sent to Denton, and Denton decided he needed to be a sex offender.
Right.
Now, the legislature said you can't put sex offender conditions on somebody unless they're a sex offender convicted of those offenses. And that's another reason why he shouldn't be subjected to this, because the maintenance polygraph, if you will, is a part of the unconstitutional sex offender counseling to begin with. It's also a violation of Article 4212.
This is a deferred, right? So he's never been convicted of anything?
Correct. Not even the injury to a child. It's still a pending case.
So, in the statement on page 6 of the state's brief, where it says the May 2008 conditions included that the applicant assume responsibility for the offense and show no deception on any polygraph examination, is that the time when it was amended to include the sex offender designation?
Yes, sir. At the time he was placed on probation, and I don't recall what date that was, it was not a condition of his probation.
All right. So the first argument is they can't put him on this probation in Denton because it wasn't a sex offense, and to which he was found guilty. And secondly, you can't put him on this polygraph because it violates his Fifth Amendment rights.
Correct, Your Honor.
That's the nutshell of your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. The probation was agreed to, entered into, and the conditions established on February 26, 2008. And there was no sex offender counseling. There was no polygraph maintenance provision. It was only on March of 2009 that they decided to bring him back from Denton because he wouldn't sign the paper saying he would consent to the sexual offense. The first writ of habeas corpus was filed objecting to those additional conditions, and then we've gone from there.
You wouldn't be here if that was part of the plea to which he originally agreed.
I would have a much lower burden, but I believe that you cannot require an individual under the Chapman and Murphy cases, Murphy being the Supreme Court, Chapman being the state court, to waive your Fifth Amendment privilege because you're a convicted felon. I don't think you can contractually require, in effect, that the Constitution no longer applies to you because the Supreme Court under Murphy says that a person does not lose your constitutional rights and cannot be compelled, and that would be compulsion, to admit to any type of criminal conduct or quasi-criminal conduct so long as you, just because you have been convicted of a crime. And Mr. D'Angelo has never been convicted of anything. He's still on a deferred. He's subject to everything. And the counseling program is, you've got to talk about all this bad stuff you did. And that's a violation, by the way. You know, the courts has said, and I believe that one member of this court has said in the past, that if a person admits to sexual conduct with other children during counseling and such, that's not going to be used against him. Well, that's a crime. That is a crime to not report somebody to the police for assaulting or molesting children when they find out about it. You have to do that. It's not optional that, well, this is sex offender treatment, as you know, and I submit that the sex offender treatment people are violating the law every day and ought to be prosecuted because they are not, according to testimony that they give occasionally, reporting these people once they admit to criminal conduct, having molested children on other occasions as part of their, quote, treatment. They
Can
have
you clarify
to report
something
it.
For me? I know apparently at the plea hearing, they added this fifth count, which talked about the injury to a child.
Yes.
What happened to the originally indicted four counts?
You would assume that it would be dismissed, but there is nothing in the record. There is no notation that those counts were dismissed. They're just still kind of pending out there.
But they're not usually simultaneously dismissed at the time of the plea?
Sometimes they are. Usually they don't. They simply, everybody just sort of assumes, and lawyers are bad about that, that, well, you've got a plea bargain out of that indictment. You can't do anything with the other counts. And they kind of go away on their own. But, in fact, it's still pending because it's a deferred. There is no jeopardy necessarily to the plea. There is probably a contractual basis that you could complain about being prosecuted. But I'm not even sure of that. When you're on a deferred, you're still subject to everything. And they're holding Mr. D'Angelo to this day because he will not waive his Fifth Amendment rights and submit to a polygraph. And it's not right.
And they're also denying him bail.
Denying him bail, even to this day.
Because he won't waive his Fifth Amendment right.
Correct. And, you know, there's supposed to be a hearing to set conditions, which I'm sure is going to include take a polygraph, and we're going to be back up here. That's set for Friday. And, of course, even if somehow a bond was made, they'd leave him in until Monday. I mean, it's not right. It's Mr. D'Angelo is being punished for exercising his constitutional rights. And that's what we're asking this court to so find and to relieve him of that burden, because he has the constitutional right to refuse to answer those questions. He has the constitutional right not to be punished in any way, form, or fashion for exercising that right. And this court should enforce both our federal constitution and the constitution of the state of Texas, which provides that you can't be compelled to give evidence, period, any kind of evidence, which is much broader than the federal constitution, unless the court has some other issues. Again, the 915 provision, say, limiting by the legislature, limiting sex offender counseling to people convicted of those sex offenses, I submit is a legislative act that limits the trial court's ability to put that on a person not convicted of, or placed on deferred for those offenses. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Burns. Ms. Jacobs.
May it please the court. My name is Andrea Jacobs, and I'm here on behalf of the state of Texas, the appellee in this matter. Unless the court has any objection or questions, I'm going to focus my argument on appellant's issue one, and because I believe issue two is thoroughly addressed in my brief. Regarding issue one, the fact that he was confined based on failure to submit to the polygraph as required by the conditions of his probation and by his, deferred adjudication and his bond, I believe the best way to focus the legal argument is whether the defendant has a blanket Fifth Amendment privilege when taking a polygraph, or whether the court should look at each question individually to determine whether the assertion of the Fifth Amendment was valid. Because there must be a realistic threat of incrimination and not some remote, unlikely, or speculative threat, it is reasonable that the court should look at each question separately. I've been unable to find criminal cases directly on point. As this court is aware, the witness in a civil proceeding must invoke their Fifth Amendment with each question. I found courts in other jurisdictions, such as the Ninth Circuit Court and United States v. Pierce, appear to apply this rule to criminal cases as well, because a proper application of the Hoffman standard requires that the Fifth Amendment claim be raised in response to specific questions propounded by the investigating body.
So where are you going?
Where I'm going is that we need to just focus on the questions individually.
All right, why don't we first focus on question number four?
Okay. Question number four.
Since you have been on probation, have you intentionally committed any sexual crimes?
Is bad. We shouldn't. He has a Fifth Amendment right to invoke because there's a realistic threat of incrimination there.
Okay. Since you have been on probation, have you tried to isolate any child for sexual purposes?
I believe that that question is proper.
Would that violate the terms of his probation and subject to incarceration?
Actually, it would not. If he answered that question, to look at it in the most broad term, generic term, yes, we argue in our brief that it might, but if you think about it, it says, have you tried to isolate a child? If he says yes, he's still not violated the conditions of his probation. That question is clearly for rehabilitation purposes and to determine to the extent how his counseling is going. So
wait a minute. If he's ordered not to be around children under a certain age, which is a standard condition of sexual sex offender probation, which he shouldn't be on since he isn't on deferred for any sex offender offense, but he's apparently on probation for a sex offender offense. One of the conditions is always you cannot be around children. So if you've tried to be around children, or if you have tried to isolate a child, you have been around children, that's clearly opening a person to revocation.
Well, it depends.
If it doesn't go as far as an attempt.
Well, it's right. It's only asking if he's tried, though. It's not an admission that he was with children or that he did isolate any children. But if it was actually an admission to his probation, that still is clearly acceptable under Minnesota v. Murphy, because they say that admissions of probation does not violate your Fifth Amendment rights because the probation revocation is not a criminal proceeding. And so you look at, there's a different standard.
What, are you telling me that in a civil proceeding you can't invoke your Fifth Amendment right?
No, you can. But the privilege all depends on what type of harm you're opening yourself up to. It doesn't go by proceeding. It actually, there's case law that says that you look at what you're opening yourself up to. Like if it's a criminal offense you're admitting, or if it's a civil offense you're admitting. Minnesota v. Murphy, clearly the Supreme Court has said that an admission of a violation of probation, admission of a violation of your conditions of your probation, you cannot refuse to answer if that's going to be the case.
As a practical matter, he doesn't have a lawyer sitting there when these questions are being asked, right?
Actually, in this case, he called his attorney, and his attorney advised him not to. They went through the questions on the phone. The examiner let him call his attorney. They went through the questions.
I recall that.
And his attorney said, do not answer in the polygraph.
What about the rule that if you begin answering the questions, you can't then selectively invoke your Fifth Amendment right? You've waived it.
I don't think that would apply here because
that's the rule.
Well, I think the situation is different in this case because we're talking about specific, he's got to show realistic threat of incrimination, and I don't think that rule applies when we're talking about specific questions and such. We're not talking about on the stand. We're not talking about, I just, for some reason that rule is not gelling up with me, but I don't think that would apply here because I think he has to still show a realistic threat of incrimination, and the, you know, tie goes to the runner if he was to sit there and say, wait, I invoke my Fifth Amendment. We can't force him. It's very clear in the case law that the state can't make you waive your privilege.
So you can hold somebody in jail, deny them a bond because they don't want to answer a question about whether they have been planning to commit crimes.
Actually, I believe that if they would have filed the 4212 Section 21 motion that is allowed by statute, that she could have only held him for 20 days. She'd have to have the hearing or decide whether or not he'd violated the conditions. They didn't file the 4212-21 motion that actually says the trial court shall do it within 20 days. Now, the writs were filed, and the second writ and the third writ, the writ filed on July 15th, I believe, was denied on July 15th. That's why we requested to be abated back so we could actually get findings because I didn't know, I mean, there was no way to tell why the trial court denied it. The first writ was filed before he was confined because he was confined in July. I believe it was July 10th based on a July 8th or July 9th polygraph. The first writ was filed in March. And so while it was proceeding, that's when this happened. The first writ was denied on July 21st. So it had all, you know, it was going to an end when he filed the second writ July 15th alleging the violation of that his confinement was in violation of his Fifth Amendment rights.
Was the first writ filed in Denton County when Denton added to his conditions of probation?
No, I believe actually what happened was Denton had him, because he moved up to Denton, and they had, they were like, well, we want to add some things, and they then sent him back to Tarrant County. I don't believe any writ was filed in Denton County. I don't believe there would be any jurisdiction for them to file it because it was the probation departments that were transferring, and that's why they transferred him back.
So your position is, the condition of probation is you will not intentionally commit any sexual crimes, he cannot invoke his Fifth Amendment right if he's asked about that.
I'm sorry, say that again.
We agreed that question number four
is bad.
Is totally improper.
And so is number two.
And number two, that's where I was going next.
Yeah.
But your position is if a term of probation was you will not intentionally commit any sexual crimes, he can be asked that question and it's not protected by the Fifth Amendment because it was a condition of probation.
No, sir. I don't think that's what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that Minnesota v. Murphy says if it's only asking you a question about a violation of probation and not another criminal offense.
Itself is not a crime.
Under 17? Having sex with what?
I'm following you.
Okay, so no, I think those are two separate issues. Yes, first, if you look at it and you say, you know what, if he admits this and he's going to admit to a criminal offense, then that's a proper and valid invocation of his Fifth Amendment right. But if you look at it and it's only for a probation violation, then he hasn't validly shown a realistic threat of self-incrimination.
All right, I'm following you. You want to address how he got to be a sex offender in a sex offender situation when he was not convicted of that?
Well, that was issue two, but that's great. Yeah. What happened now, I don't think Denton County is the one that changed the rules on him. I believe the court called him back in May and said, you know what, I wasn't here that day when you pled. I can change your conditions at any time. I believe I want to impose these reasonable conditions. I believe that was Judge Westfall that did that. I haven't read anything in the record that would suggest that Denton County had anything to do with that. Because I believe he moved to Denton County after that, and it wasn't until the following year, around January, so I seem to recall, is when Denton County got involved and sent him back.
So you can change conditions just because?
Well, there still has to be any reasonable condition. The trial, now in his...
You add conditions, well, is it reasonable to impose sex offender conditions when you haven't been convicted of a sexual crime?
I believe so. I think that, and actually there's a case in Speth v. State, appellant discusses that the statute prohibits someone of not of a sex offender getting sex offender conditions. But in Speth v. State, they actually said, on the contrary, Section 11 of 4212 is so broadly discretionary that there are only two exceptions to Section 11's permission tone, a provision prohibiting the imposition of certain payments and another provision prohibiting a requirement that the defendant undergo an orchiotomy. Now, other than those two... Well, you'll have to look it up. I'm not going to explain. So the judge, you know, they may impose any reasonable condition. In his written plea admonishments, it does say at any time the judge may add conditions, any reasonable conditions, and you are unaware that the court has this authority to do so. When you look at it, just because they're sex offender counseling, I believe is what he got, they don't always, you know, yes, sex offenders have to have sex offender counseling.
But in order to participate in sex offender counseling, you have to admit that you have committed sex offenses. Otherwise, you get kicked out of sex offender counseling and your condition and your probation is revoked. So how can you compel somebody who is not on probation for a sex offense to go in and admit to sex offenses in order to remain on probation? And that's what's happening.
No, actually, not in this writ, not with these four questions.
Well,
issue...
Not those four questions, but that's what's required of sex offender counseling. They call it taking responsibility.
Right.
Taking responsibility means admitting to committing sex offenses. You admit to committing sex offenses, you're not on deferred for committing sex offenses. They can go out and re-indict you because they have made the statute of limitations for life.
I believe that in this case, you know, they're requiring he admit the underlying offense. And the underlying offense was
denied the underlying offense.
Well, but you know, he pled to the underlying facts. I mean, if he's denying that he did anything, that's
he
one thing.
To assault.
Right.
Not to sex assault.
Right.
Sex assault.
And so if he alleged that he didn't commit anything and that's why he got revoked, then we'd be here under that. But we're not. We're here because of the polygraph and because of the conditions. Now, Murphy B. All the cases he cited regarding you cannot be compelled to admit other criminal offenses, I don't think that would apply in that situation. Now, if that situation were to arise, we would discuss that because, you know, it's still the same offense. Whether we have delineated it as a sex offense or as a not, it's still the same offense. I don't believe that we can re-indict him under the same offense. If he goes in and says, you know what, I pled to injury to a child, but yeah, It was sexual. It really was. We're not going to turn around and indict him again because we already got him for that offense.
The courts have held that you can convict for fondling breasts, fondling anus, and fondling genitals in a single transaction as three separate offenses. So why on earth couldn't you go back and prosecute?
Well, if he invoked his Fifth Amendment right for anything else other than the one of touching with the hand, I mean, he clearly, if he's forced to admit what he did or forced to admit something for counseling and he says, yeah, I touched her with my hand because that's what he pled to, and then he said, I invoked my Fifth for anything else, I can see how that would apply because then we're talking about different offenses. But
I'll ask you another question. Mm-hmm. Was his lawyer present
I do not know. That would be in the record. It would be on the signature, but I don't know.
So you've got the judge, the prosecutor, the defendant.
And probation officer.
Probation officer. And no lawyer for the defendant, and his conditions of probation are amended to turn him into a sex offender when he wouldn't plead to that in the first place?
Well, they don't turn him into a sex offender. They're only requiring sex offender counseling, and I think that's different. There is a difference. He's not having to register as a sex offender. He's have to going through the counseling that is normally going through for sex offender case line. I'm sorry?
And take responsibility for being a sex offender.
If that's something that they talk about in counseling, then there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence about that issue in this writ.
Does it bother you that this guy is sitting in jail because he follows the advice of his lawyer, and we have to come all the way up here to the Court of Appeals to decide which questions should he have denied to answer and which should he have answered while he sits in jail for months? Does that bother you?
I think procedurally, if the 42-12-21 motion was filed, then he wouldn't be there. And so, yes, on a, you know, it does bother me that he's been there over 7 months. And, every, you know, it's been a while. Unfortunately, there was a procedure in motion that he could have filed. They could have filed the 42-12-21 motion and would have been out within 20 days. And that was not filed. Now, you know, it says trial court shall. That is clear in that situation. Yes, advice of counsel that he not admit to any sexual offenses of a sexual nature, that's not really the standard for the realistic threat of incrimination. And but there is, polygraphs are a reasonable term of conditions of probation. And they are, my time is up. Do you want me to finish?
Yeah, okay. Please finish your thought. And
okay.
Are polygraphs a reasonable term of probation for all community supervision and defers?
I think when it's when it actually fits to the reasonable condition of if it will rehabilitate, reform, you know, protect, restore, things like that. In this situation, you know, they used it as a sex offender, but I think that if it was a reasonable condition under the terms that it, you know, would be good for the defendant, yes, I believe in any situation it could be. This is an underlying sex offender offense, so yes, that's why they were in place.
But.
Okay,
I'm sure Mr. Burns now will.
All right.
Like
thank you.
Words.
Thank you,
Ms.
Jacobs.
Mr.
Burns,
you.
Rebuttal.
I'm tossing the assault ball.
Your Honor, there was a petition to proceed to adjudication filed in this case, and as we pointed out, it shows in the record, volume 1, page 20, paragraphs 12 through 14, of case number 0942415D, that petition was dismissed. He is being held in jail because he refuses to waive his Fifth Amendment privilege specifically and take a polygraph. There is not a petition to proceed to adjudication filed.
Okay. How do you address her argument that the Supreme Court basically has said the Fifth Amendment doesn't cover probation revocation questions? Now, we've agreed that 2 and 4 are outside of that. But 1 and 3 are under that. How do you address that?
Well, for one thing, the Supreme Court is only the first step. They set the floor, or the ceiling, not the floor. And the Court of Criminal Appeals in Chapman says clearly that it applies to everything administrative, criminal, civil, formal or informal. You can invoke your Fifth Amendment right not to answer any questions that you feel could cause future proceedings against you, and for that reason, and they could. It doesn't have to. The question itself doesn't have to be a criminal offense if it could lead to actions that could result in a criminal offense.
The Minnesota case is the United States Supreme Court case versus the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, and I think we know which one held the trump card there.
They have the right. The Fifth Amendment gives you protections. The Texas Constitution can and does, under the very wording of the Texas Constitution, can give you more protection. And it does give you more protection under Chapman. They say, and it's refreshing that, you know, us old geezers who remember the Court of Criminal Appeals, you know, protection of criminal rights, and again before the appellate review of harmless error, substantial harm to rights, that, you know, the court did protect our rights. It was one of the most admired courts in the country. It was sort of like when you went to a seminar.
Onion Court.
But
the Judge Onion Court.
Yes, sir. And you know, you go to seminars, and you know, lawyers would sort of, mother states would take out candles and dim the lights when they talked about the Court of Criminal Appeals, and now we're getting some cases that perhaps we're getting like California.
Sets the minimum protections.
Yes, sir.
But the states
can give more.
Can provide greater protections, and the state of Texas has held that there will be no requirement that you waive your right not to incriminate to yourself or to say something, to be compelled to say something that would lead
to a criminal.
To a criminal.
And Chapman is very clear. And I mean, they hit every possible aspect you could hit. I can't think of another proceeding, formal or informal, civil, criminal, or administrative. You cannot be compelled in those actions to waive your Fifth Amendment privilege and, or more importantly, the Article 1, Section 10 privilege of the Texas Constitution. You cannot be compelled to admit to such actions. That's what Mr. DeAngelo is in jail about. And you know, I don't even question the good intentions of sex offender counselors and a lot of trial judges who put these things on them. But, you know, as the old saying goes, you know, the road to hell is paved by good intentions. And we may be heading to a Dante's inferno.
Right. If I was the state, this Chapman case says, might incriminate him in future criminal proceedings.
Yes, sir.
But this criminal proceeding has already occurred.
Well, no. It's still a pending criminal proceeding because he's on deferred.
I know, but everything has already been decided here.
No. No, there's still an indictment against him.
I know, but he has admitted to injury to a child. So if he violates the conditions of probation to injury to a child, then he's basically going to jail.
Yes, sir.
This criminal proceeding, because I'm being a devil's advocate,
so yes, sir,
to use that phrase, might incriminate him to future criminal proceedings. This criminal proceeding has already occurred. It's not in the future. It's done and over with.
A revocation is still a criminal proceeding that could be used against you. In addition, the other counts of the indictment are potential criminal proceedings. And there's no limit other than the statutory limit to your incarceration. This is not a straight probation where you get 5 years for 5 years. This is a deferred. You know, the entire range of punishment is available to the trial court should they decide to revoke your proceed to adjudicate
you. A future criminal proceeding includes a revocation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that in here?
They don't specifically say, except to point out the
is there some law
civil
out there that
criminal.
Mr. Burns, let me finish.
No,
the
I'm sorry.
Question. Mm-hmm. Is there some law out there that you can provide us that says a future criminal proceeding includes a revocation of probation?
I haven't seen such a case, and I've read most cases around because it's just obvious. I can't see where anyone would not consider your liberty being taken away from you and incarcerated in a cage like an animal would not be criminal in nature, punitive, if you will. And Fifth Amendment applies even to punitive damages. You can take that.
Time is up.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Burns.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, counsel. Your case is submitted today. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing. You all are dismissed. We will adjourn for a 5 or 10 minute recess.